From Directions Media, this is Directions on the News for Tuesday, March 9th, 2010. Each week, this podcast explores news and trends related to all things location. This is Adina Schutzberg, executive editor in Annapolis, Maryland.
And this is Joe Francica, editor-in-chief in Huntsville, Alabama.
This week, we look at two news items connected, at least superficially, by reliance on crowdsourced geospatial data. Placial, one of the earliest players to offer a simple way to customize Google Maps, announced it was ceasing operations this week. Microsoft, which is working hard to find a solid footing in the mobile space, announced a contract with Navizon, a company that crowdsources the data collection of Wi-Fi access points. Why did small but clever Placial not make it? What are the implications for others in that space? And why is Microsoft turning to small, less familiar Navizon and crowdsourcing over a more familiar player like Skyhook? We'll dig into these corporate decisions after a word from our sponsor.
Manage your field data and immediately share critical business information across your enterprise. For more information, visit www.esri.com/mobile solutions.
Now, it was way back on February 27th in a blog post titled Geographic Euthanasia, the End of Placial as We Know It, that the Placial folks warned that the site was to be shut down. And mostly that post detailed how to export your data and explained that GeoCommons, that's the site hosted by Fortius One, would be hosting all of the data collected on the site. That's 5 years worth of data. On March 1st, another post appeared titled A Letter to Our Mappers. And that explained the situation a little bit more. And let me just quote, "We are retiring the site because we just can't afford to keep it up any longer. The team has been volunteering for 18 months. However, it will morph into something more extraordinary, more efficient, and more in line with the possibilities and technology of 2010 and beyond. We don't have a full picture yet, but we will let you know once we have a realistic picture." Unquote. And that post also went on to explain that the staff was all working in related areas with geospatial technologies, including Diane Eisner, who, as many people know, has been working with Waze about a year now, I think. Just to recap about Placial, it was founded in 2005, and what it really offered was a way to put your personal places of interest on the map, on a Google map. And as of this month, there were 5 million maps created, mostly by just regular people. Placial had a few million dollars of investor money from a variety of funders, one of whom was Jack Dangerman. And as noted above, that money ran out 18 months ago. And doing a little bit of digging into an interview with GigaOhm, I learned that they did in fact try to sell Placial. One of the companies that they thought they tried to sell to that they could mention was National Geographic. The other thing that came out of that interview, which I think is spot on, although kind of sad, is that Placial really was ahead of its time for a number of reasons. It was ahead of its time because it was providing something that I think we all knew in our heart of hearts that Google would ultimately provide as well. And it was ahead of its time because the vision was to use the data created as a tool for location-based advertising, and that's how the money would come in, and that didn't mature fast enough, if you like, for Placial to be lucrative. So was this a surprise to you, Joe, when you heard that Placial was going down?
No, especially because, as Diane noted, that the business model was based on the premise that location-based advertising was going to kick in, and that would be the way that the whole company would be funded. As you look back over the playing field of the last couple of years of what's happened to location-based advertising, it really has not blossomed at all. Certainly, they were far ahead in terms of social mapping, individualized neo-geography. They had quite a number of people download the app. They had lots of people contribute, but it seemed to fail only because there were other options in that intervening five-year period. Sometimes these early people with early foot in the door in the market just kind of lead the way for others. So unfortunate, but that's sometimes the way it happens.
Diane, in some of the interviews and some of the folks sort of commenting on the shutdown, really did turn into a positive. And let me quote Reed Wright Webb. It started its article by saying, It's not every day that a business shuts down but declares itself a success in helping kick off an unstoppable movement to change the world. That's pretty high praise for a company that was not successful. I have to say, if Placial hadn't been there first, somebody else would have been. But I do agree that Placial was one of those factors that got a lot of things going, including things like the OpenStreetMap and this whole idea of you being part of the mapping process.
I want to make another comment, and it has more to do with what happened to startups, or what seems to happen with startups when you have some initial investors. And one of the initial investors was Kleiner Perkins, one of the more visible venture capitalists in the Bay Area. And having worked for a company that went through venture capital funding, I somewhat fault the VCs. And the reason I say that is they've got to be on the lookout for other trends in the market before something like this comes down. So in some degree, as advisors, as investors, you'd like to see them step in and say, you know what, market is going this way, maybe take another tack before the end comes. And maybe it's just a function of what's happened to VCs since the bubble burst in the early 2000s. But I'd like to see, I would have, and it would be interesting to hear Diane's comment about that, but sometimes VCs just throw money at you and don't take an active involvement. And I just think that VCs got to take a more active role sometimes.
So you're saying VCs have to do their homework.
Right. And again, there were a few folks who stepped in with money for Palatial that probably could have at least given them some heads up. Especially the thing about location-based advertising. We have been waiting for years and still continue to wait for the model that's going to work, and it's not quite there. Hindsight's 20/20, of course, but that's the way it's happening.
Right. Well, let me give you a little bit more hindsight. I dug up out of the All Points blog archive a post from April 4, 2007, titled "Mashup Startups Respond to Google My Maps." That was when Google basically came out with its own version of what Placial and a lot of other players did, with this idea that you can map your own stuff and save it and share it and so forth. And I cite in there a post from Donna Bogatin, where she sort of summarizes the responses of Placial and Plazes and a bunch of other companies that were sort of in that space. And the way I summarized her collection was to say, no, we're okay. We have our niche. You know, Google isn't going to shut us down. We have our special niche, and we'll be fine. I guess I wasn't so optimistic about that. And let me quote myself here. I said back in 2007, "Horizontal features will in time migrate to the core of the software." I had seen this happen enough with CAD software and GIS software, where if somebody adds something so horizontal that you kind of bang your palm on your head and say, oh my goodness, that should be in the core, it ultimately gets there, whether the company, you know, codes its own or they buy the person who provided it or whatever, it eventually is going to end up there.
So the other thing is that is this idea of social mapping catching on at all? Were the maps that were created in Placial, were they just simply personal maps, or did people share them? And when was there the social interaction that should have taken place? Much like what is happening now with Foursquare or Gowalla, which is kind of a little different, but that's a different play on the social. I'm just wondering if what happened to Placial was the right thing that people were latching onto, or whether it's just was just too personal and sharing just didn't happen.
No, I don't think that was the problem. I'm going to go back to it was ahead of its time, because I think those maps might have been far more shared and shareable had they been in this time where we're all living in social networks. I mean, even I would consider you and me to be late adopters. We're on LinkedIn, we're on Facebook, we're on Twitter. And that's where all of those kinds of things are being shared. I would suggest that Placial maybe wasn't around at the time to take full advantage of that.
Well, I think what you're saying then is that the infrastructure for social networking was not there. And sometimes the catalyst for other things like Palatial is often based on something else. Something else catalyzes the whole movement. And in this case, social nets as the underpinnings weren't there yet.
Very much like the fact that location-based advertising wasn't there yet. Now, let's talk a little bit about the potential of selling Placial. It's my understanding from the interview that Diane gave that they couldn't sell the technology because Google already has it, right? So that's not unique anymore. What I think they were really trying to sell was this database. For whatever reason, and we have no particular insights into this, nobody seemed to want to buy it.
Well, what was it? You know, was it just a bunch of people adding their own stuff to maps, or was it truly useful content?
Here's a good inkling. Did you ever go to Placial to find out what was there?
No.
I didn't either. I'll note, too, that James Fee makes the comment that he never even mentioned it in all of his years of blogging. He knew it was out there, but never sort of went there. I have a picture in my head of what I think of the kind of data is there. I guess no particular organization can say, oh, that's really valuable. We know exactly how we can use that.
Let's fast forward to what we have today here. We use Google. We use Bing to find out things, and I use both continuously when I'm planning travel. And I use those services to go to a place like, where's the conference going to be, and where's the hotel nearby that I may think of staying at. Other things populate that map, but I don't see anything on those maps done that are not readily exposed by the provider. In other words, there'll be Picasa stuff on Google, but that's about it. For example, if somebody shared a running route around a hotel, I don't see that popping up.
Well, and that's not to say that it's not there, but I think what you're saying is that perhaps Google and Microsoft have not exposed those in a way for you to take advantage of them.
In other words, if you go back to what Palacio was trying to do, you would go there to see what others have posted. Well, but my platform is not Palacio. My platform is Google or Bing. And
right.
I want to see things that are exposed by other people if that's going to help me make a decision, you know, where to run, where to have a, you know, get a hotel,
right.
Whatever.
And that to me sort of coils back on this. Remember when KML search came out in Google, and I thought this was going to solve all kinds of problems, and boy, it seems to have solved almost no problems because people don't even use it in Google to find KMLs and KMZs that are in my maps or elsewhere to layer on top of the Google map.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Just like you said, why didn't that KML search become more useful? And it goes to my issue of, I want to do a semantic query, find me the running routes around my hotel at this conference. Can I issue that kind of query and be returned a result that shows me a map? That's what I want to do.
Oh, I am. We're not there yet.
Yeah, we're not there.
Alas. The last point I want to make about Placial shutdown before we move on to talk about Microsoft and Navizon is that there was another announcement this week that had to do with a company that was providing a free mapping service. This company is called ZMaps. And they just tweaked their offering a little bit such that most things are still free and all is good, but a few tools now you actually have to pay to have access to, and they're sort of bulk tools, I guess is the way I would describe them. So they're trying to bring in a little bit of money that way, sort of with a freemium model, where some stuff is free. If you want a little more functionality, you pay a little bit. And my suspicion is they're sort of in the same place, that we're not making money on any other things. We've got to go to you, the users. And not just that, to go to a subset of the users to ask you to help us stay in business. And I think we're going to be seeing more and more of that. let's move on to the other story we wanted to mention this week. Microsoft has signed a deal with Navizon to use its technology for geolocation that is built on Wi-Fi and cellular information. And let me just quote what Navizon does, for those who aren't familiar with it. Navizon crowdsources GPS positioning with its community of more than 1 million registered users from all over the world. The startup's users build a dynamic database of Wi-Fi access points in GSM, CDMA, and 3G towers. Navizon software triangulates signals broadcast from Wi-Fi access points and cellular towers to determine geolocation. The other big user of Navizon that you might not be aware of is Yahoo. The company that we talk about the most that provides that same kind of service, but that doesn't use crowdsourcing, is Skyhook Wireless, and that's who Apple uses. And they've teamed up with, they have a number of partnerships. Navizon's a little smaller. So why do you think Microsoft didn't go with Skyhook?
Good question. And that's the question of the day. What's the difference? You know, what's the differentiator between Navizon and Skyhook? I don't necessarily see a differentiation unless there's pricing. You have to compete on something, and maybe this was a pricing issue.
I would think it is pricing. I would think that Navizon can keep its prices down because it doesn't have to pay people to drive around to continuously update the maps. It has its registered users do that, and it does pay them in an interesting sort of way. You can actually make money by driving around with their app on your phone. It all happens automatically. You don't actually have to do anything. Like, I think this is also part of this rearranging of the players in the mobile space. Microsoft is just releasing a new mobile operating system. It's trying to get its head around mobile in a way to... It's not even really a player.
Right.
And I think they're trying to figure out their way forward. Maybe if they go with Skyhook, then they're too close to Apple. Although there have been rumors that the iPhone is going to be using Bing searches versus Google searches, because now Apple and Google are not as friendly as they might be. So it might be part of that sort of positioning. That's sort of my guess.
Is there a different question here that we should be asking? Is Wi-Fi positioning going to last? No, I just wonder if the business model isn't such that Wi-Fi positioning may go away.
It's a great question. The best I can say for the current state of affairs is, well, it sure sounds like Microsoft is betting it's going to be around, at least for the short term, as has Google, as has Apple. So everybody seems to be in for now. By the same token, other technologies that are supposed to solve this location problem. I just saw a press release not too long ago from Rosum. Remember, that's the company that uses
sure.
TV signals.
Right.
Boy, they've gone a whole lot of nowhere. I haven't seen they've partnered and put it on a chip with some other location capabilities, but boy, you never hear about that technology being used. So I guess in the short term, Wi-Fi positioning seems to be here to stay. Well, that's all the time we have this week. Before we go, our sponsor, ESRI, would like you to know that ArcGIS 3D Analyst provides powerful and advanced visualization, analysis, and surface generation tool. With this ArcGIS desktop extension, you can view extremely large sets of data in three dimensions from multiple viewpoints, query a surface, and create a realistic perspective image that drapes raster and vector data over a surface. Visit www.esri.com/3danalyst to request a free 60-day trial. If you'd like to comment on today's podcast, you can send us an email at editors@directionsmag.com or leave us a comment at Directions Magazine or All Points Blog. Thanks for joining us, and be sure to tell a friend.